Greetings, pet lovers, and welcome back to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them, sponsored by WebDVM, typed into your browser as web-dvm.net, health advice and information online community for dog and cat lovers. That is also where I run a blog through that has additional ancillary information that I post to regularly, and I also embed the players for this particular show if you don't happen to be a Blog Talk Radio or iTunes listener. Welcome, everyone, and the title of tonight's show is You Get What You Pay For, Version 2. So I call this Version 2 because I did a piece on this some time ago. It was a long time ago. I don't exactly remember when. I've been doing this program since 2009, so we're in our sixth year of production here. But one of the biggest differences that I've come across in my veterinary career and how I've seen the industry evolve from a very burgeoning time when the industry was really getting into the cutting edge aspects of medicine, very exciting time when I was just graduating back in 2002. Veterinary practices were doing very well. People were happy to frequent them and enjoy the level of medicine that was being offered. It was just going up another echelon. It was part of the golden years of veterinary medicine, but also the golden years of the quality of care. And while definite state-of-the-art advances continue to bless our industry, it is a different time because while on one hand, we have new stuff coming out every day, really exciting stuff, stuff that I'll be reporting on this year. Actually, my next episode is going to be about something very cutting edge and very new, very exciting from a holistic standpoint. But at the same token, you have this kind of devaluation of certain services, and two of them in particular are well care, which is, that was the inspiration behind me having done that whole preventative pet healthcare series. And if you have not listened to that, I would advise you to go back and listen to all of them because it's very important. Well care is extremely important, but it's kind of been devalued in recent years. I did blame the veterinary profession more than anybody because it was a matter of us taking pet owner participation for granted and not really taking the extra time to communicate properly, I believe, the importance of the well care. And so we're learning our lesson and we're really making a push, or many of us are making a push to turn that tide. But the other place where we see things have become devalued is when it comes to spays and neuters. Now, spays and neuters are surgical procedures. While they are done routinely, there is nothing routine about them. When you look at a spay on a dog is an ovariohysterectomy. You are ligating some major blood vessels, specifically the ovarian artery and the uterine artery, that come right off the abdominal aorta. Done improperly, there is a potential for internal bleeding and death from that. There is also sterile surgical technique that is very important. It is surgery. We're going into a sterile abdomen. We must maintain optimal sterility, no different than if we're doing any other kind of surgery. And we're seeing that fall off, not in general practices like mine, but in a lot of these discount spay-neuter clinics we're seeing pop up all over the place. So not just the spay, the neuter also is a surgery. Now, it's not quite as invasive as the spay. We're not going inside the abdomen, but we are incising into the inguinal canal. We are ligating major arteries as well, the testicular artery and vein, and also done improperly can lead to serious life-threatening hemorrhage. Done without proper sterile technique, meaning good sterility, perfect surgical hygiene, so to speak, post-operative infections can occur, which can be hideous. So let's kind of dive into this. So around, it really kind of surprised me when I first got down to Florida as really the first I heard of these types of places. Didn't really experience that in New York in the first few years of my career, but of course, I do believe they do exist there now. I haven't been not back in New York in some time. I don't have very many colleagues up there anymore, but at the same token, I do understand that this phenomenon is kind of occurring all over the place, and I don't see why New York would be any different. But I came down to Florida in 2004, took over my practice, had great expectations, a lot of things I wanted to do, and I saw a bit of a difference in culture here, and part of that difference in culture was the existence of these express discount spay-neuter clinics and vaccine clinics as well. But we're not going to really focus on the vaccine part. I think we really covered that in depthly with the preventative pet welfare or pet healthcare series. But as far as the spays and neuters are concerned, there's you know, one place in particular. I believe they've just opened their third location in the county, and they offer super low-cost spays and neuters. And I remember at first seeing, and again, back in 04, seeing the prices that they were doing them for and thinking to myself, how could you possibly be doing spays and neuters at these prices and still be using quality suture material, gowning up and exercising proper sterile technique for every surgery, draping off properly, using a fresh tracheal tube. Endotracheal tubes are the tubes that we put into the airway to deliver the anesthesia, to protect the airway and safely deliver anesthesia, have a port to ventilate the patient if they were to stop breathing for any reason, have an IV catheter and deliver intravenous fluids were exceedingly important during a procedure because anesthesia can cause drops in blood pressure, which can become dangerous. Having proper monitoring equipment, you know, the surgical monitor that I have that measures EKG or the electrical pulse wave of the heart, blood pressure, temperature, carbon dioxide levels, oxygen levels of the blood, all of these things that tell us in a real-time basis the stability of the patient. You know, my monitor is an $8,000 monitor. It's like, how do you have all these things and are charging what you're charging for these spays and neuters? Well, I've learned through the years that they're charging what they're charging because they're not offering the same product, although they are advertising it as the same product as what a client having their pet spayed or neutered would receive in my hospital, for example. So my hospital is what's called AHA certified. So AHA is the American Animal Hospital Association, and the American Animal Hospital Association is an association that basically puts forth standards of care guidelines, not just standards of care, but maintenance of a hospital, operations, proper documentation, proper record keeping, all of the things that are expected of a practice to be operating under the same standard of a veterinary college university. Because what used to happen eons ago in veterinary medicine, and to some degree today, is these veterinarians leave school and they get hired by veterinarians that have been out of school for many years, and some of them have just fallen off the standard of care. They've begun to cut corners. They don't do things like they used to do them in school. They don't practice at that standard. And as a result, then the new graduates pick up the bad habits, and it's like this sort of vicious cycle. So AHA comes along. They've been around for quite some time, and they've created the standard of care, and it is a voluntary participation. They're not like the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, that is the governing body of veterinary medicine. No, AHA is a voluntary participation. You have to actually apply to become AHA certified, and they will come in and do an audit of your practice and tell you where you're deficient in terms of meeting their standards, what you need to do to achieve their standards. And then after you get that guideline, you take the time to make the changes you need to make and invite them back for an inspection to then become AHA certified, which is a very, very important distinction. After that, they come and inspect your clinic to maintain your certification once every 2 years. So we're very proud of the fact that we are AHA certified. The process took us 6 months of just rigorous auditing of all of our standards of practice. And there we were, with a very good reputation, believing that we were offering a very high standard of care. Well, clearly we had some work to do, and AHA pointed that out. So you have an AHA hospital, and there's a few of them in the county, but then you have this other hospital, and I won't even call them a hospital. They're really just, you know, a discount clinic, and they even have a TV commercial. And on the TV commercial, they are basically billing themselves as offering the same standard of care, but at much better prices. And then right there on the commercial, you actually see a veterinarian about to perform surgery on a cat, and the cat has a mask on. The cat does not have an endotracheal tube. It's masked down anesthesia, which is an absolutely horrid standard of care. When it comes to surgery, you don't have a protected airway. Without a protected airway, you don't have protection in case the patient vomits while under anesthesia, which happens all the time, and they can actually inhale the vomit because they don't actively have a swallow reflex, so they can just breathe it right in. Secondly, if that patient were to stop breathing, there's no way to ventilate the patient and breathe for them. And using what's called positive pressure ventilation, where you squeeze a bag in order to inflate the lungs and breathe for that patient until you can figure out why they're not breathing and then right the problem. And so in that scenario where sometimes you only have seconds to minutes to fix the problem, if something were to go south, they would have to take that mask off, do an emergency intubation of that patient, which waste precious seconds where the brain is losing oxygen, can cause irreversible brain damage even if you get that patient back. It's just a horrible standard of care. And there they are right on the commercial showing this man about to do his spay. The man has no mask on. The man has no cap on. There is no there's no surgical gown on. You know, you're supposed to get yourself into a surgical gown that has been sterilized. You slip into it. You glove over the sleeves of the surgical gown. Before you put on the surgical gown, you have scrubbed your hands. This man is just wearing gloves. And I will bet you would not be surprised if he didn't even scrub his hands and just threw the sterile gloves on. I mean, there it is, advertising. Hey, look at us. We're offering the same standard of care. And here I am about to do a spay in the most horrific, showing the most horrific sterile technique and administration of anesthesia. Yet, hundreds of people are frequenting their three locations per day. And one of the reasons that I decided to do this episode, again, version two, because it is a second version of an episode I did many years ago, I've had some really bad consequences of this place come into my clinic. And I'm in what's called a veterinary management group. So my hospital's in a veterinary management group where we get together twice a year, 20 clinics from all over the country. We strategize best practices. And I hear the same story over and over again that mimics my experience that I have observed that I'm going to talk about in a couple of minutes with regard to places like this. They have the same experience and the same catastrophic consequences at times from the practices of these hospitals. And so, and again, calling them hospitals is really an overstatement because they're not hospitals. So this is a common theme, and unfortunately, they've done a very good job all over the country of marketing themselves as a really nice, inexpensive, express, cheap surgical center where, you know, you're getting the same level of care and surgery, but we're not gouging you. Even though they're not doing anything remotely what, for example, the 20 clinics in my veterinary management group are doing, certainly not working to the standard of an AHA accredited hospital. So let's talk about my experiences. The first experience was a client had been coming to us for pretty much since the beginning of when I took over in 2004, a very nice couple. And these folks would do anything for their dogs. They're just very compassionate, very nice people. Well, they came across some hard times, and the wife, I believe, has some medical issues that have really taxed their financial well-being. Still, they do whatever they can, but a pit bull puppy literally showed up on their doorstep, and you know, even though this is not a household expense they needed, they were not going to turn their back on this puppy, and they kept the puppy. So they want to do the right thing. They want to get the dog spayed, and it's a female. And friends of theirs said, oh, yeah, you should go to this, you know, this place. They'll do it for real cheap, and, you know, it's great. Well, they went there, unbeknownst to me. I didn't know anything about it. And within 2 months of having been spayed, suddenly the dog is showing signs of estrus. Estrus is commonly known as heat or heat cycle. Estrus basically is when they come into season, they experience a bleed, their vulva engorges, their mammaries get big, they get ready for pregnancy. Basically, they're getting ready to get bred and they become pregnant. That happens twice a year with dogs. And they, at this point, call this clinic back. And I'm getting this a little bit of hindsight here because eventually they ended up in my office. But they call this clinic back and say, hey, listen, you know, this dog's having signs of heat. And they said, well, that's weird. It must be coming from somewhere else because we spayed your dog. Well, she said, this dog is clearly in heat. She's bleeding and everything. So they take her back and they said, okay, well, here's the deal. You know, we stand by our spay, but we'll run a test. And if the test comes back that somehow there's intact female parts left inside of her causing this, we will cover the cost of the test. It's a pretty expensive test. And we will go back in and make it right. If the test comes back, on the other hand, that this is not from female parts left behind, well, then, you know, you're going to have to look for another cause and follow up with the general veterinarian and figure out why she's still somehow secreting female hormones without her reproductive organs. So the test came back, from their perspective, inconclusive. And they said inconclusive means that we're not finding ourselves culpable. Here's the bill for the test. And no, we're not going to go back in because it's inconclusive. Well, this is when the lady now turns back to me, her longtime regular general vet, and she says to me, here's what's going on, and here's a copy of the test. Would you mind looking at it for me? I looked at the test. I said, yeah, this is not inconclusive. I said, the interpretation, you know, there's some wiggle room here, but from my perspective, when I see this level, it's not inconclusive. This dog is, for all intents and purposes, intact. Now, whether that's all of her ovaries or one or the other or half of one, a piece of the other, you know, we don't know, but I'm telling you, this dog is going to continue to have estrous cycles. And so the lady says to me, well, you know, they told me that this is just an anomalous thing and, you know, maybe I should just sit tight and let it go. And so, of course, the cycle runs its course. They usually last about 60 days. Well, dogs typically will come into heat twice a year. So now comes fall, dog comes into heat again. At this point, you know, the folks are fit to be tied and basically said, well, we need to have this addressed. What are our options? And I basically told her, you know, we have to do an exploratory surgery to go in and look for female organs, because if I were to just ultrasound, they could very easily be missed, especially now with all the scar tissue that's probably in there. There's nothing really that's going to replace an abdominal exploratory surgery. And ultimately, the exploratory surgery happened, and unbelievably, there was a complete ovary left on one side and part of an ovary left on the other. The uterine body, which is supposed to be resected all the way to the cervix, was intact. And both of the uterine horns, which are, they kind of split off from the body and head up towards the ovaries under normal circumstances, they're also supposed to be resected in a spay. So they were present as well. So this spay was not a spay at all. And it's just absolutely unbelievable. Full ovary on one side, half an ovary on the other, the body of the uterus left behind. Absolutely unbelievable. It's probably one of the worst examples of incompetence and malpractice my associate and I had ever heard of in our careers. Absolutely terrible. And so at that point, I was pretty disgusted with this place. And, you know, still, lesson hard learned. This lady went on their Facebook page and Yelp and Google and basically, you know, posted all these reviews. negative reviews, basically telling the world or the public what happened. And it's amazing. She told me that a bunch of other people jumped in and said, wow, you too? This place needs to be shut down. Blah, blah, blah. Not good. But anyway, I left it at that. I thought, you know, they probably got their comeuppance messing with this particular client, because this is a lady that, you know, she's a fine lady, but you don't trifle with her and you certainly don't deceive her that way. But the reason I decided to write about it is barely a month later, in another similar case, a local rescue group had used this clinic to have a dog they were fostering spayed prior to having her adopted out. And one of my clients adopted the dog well after the spay, so she really had no say in where and by whom the dog would be spayed. So if it were her choice, she would have never gone there. But, you know, she would have come to us, but it had already been done. So same thing happens. This dog has a spay scar, so clearly an incision had been made. Yet the dog kept coming in heat. So, you know, this lady says to me, you know, what do you recommend? And I said, you know, again, same thing. We have to do an exploratory surgery, but hey, let's first do this hormonal workup to see, you know, if this is the cause. Well, it was very clear that this dog, for all intents and purposes, was still intact. My associate actually ended up doing the exploratory surgery, and he told me the next day, he said, Roger, you're not going to believe what I found. He said she was 100% intact. There was no spay done. He goes, there was a spay scar. There was a skin incision, an abdominal incision, but the entire female reproductive tract was intact. No one had even attempted to perform a spay on this dog. So at that point, I said, you know, this cannot be left for unsuspecting people to continue to frequent places like this. And I had to speak up about it, because these are two dogs that went through two surgeries unnecessarily. Their risk of mammary cancer ended up getting increased by 30% because of the heat cycles they ended up having because of the inappropriately done spay. And in the case of the second dog, no spay whatsoever. And it's just absolutely appalling. And so if you look at my article at web-dvm.net, I have a picture of a veterinarian at the top of the article who is, this is an amazing one. It's a state government subsidized discount spay neuter clinic facility. So they're actually getting money, this one, not the one here in Florida. The one here in Florida is private for profit. This is a state government subsidized discount spay neuter clinic. And they're actually, I pulled this picture right off their website, and they're actually advertising this veterinarian, so it's a lady, doing a spay. She's got no surgical gown on. She's got not really long hair, but longer than your average man would have, you know, somewhere in between, kind of cropped hair. No surgical cap, no even hairnet. She's just got gloves on, and she's got this postage stamp sized drape that she's operating on, which is just terrible sterile technique. I don't know if she scrubbed her hands beforehand or not. I can't assume, but if the rest of how she's garbed up is any indication, this is just awful. And that's an advertisement on their site. If I own this clinic, I'd be absolutely appalled to have this advertisement. You know, it's just unbelievable the standard of care that's happened. It really has just devalued surgery and devalued the right way to do things in our industry, and I had to speak up about it. So interestingly enough, I got a very angry response at my blog post from a longtime listener, and I will go ahead and read it. You know, all of you folks, you're all very welcome to post comments at the blog or on our Facebook page. Or if you'd like to email me, the email address is comments@web-dvm.net. But in this case, this lady chose to post at the blog. And her name is Lonnie. She actually posted her full name, but I'm not going to say that on the air. But this is what she wrote. Wow, you just lost one of your longest time listeners and readers and fans, I am so disappointed in this article, as I do not feel you've done all your research on the subject, Dr. Roger. I'm a veterinary technician at a not-profit, low-cost, high-quality spay-neuter clinic and proud of the work we do, and know it is just as high, if not higher, than some of the quality of some of the local veterinarians. We have spayed and castrated over 13,000 cats and dogs in just the last 2 years since we opened, including life-threatening pyometras that owners otherwise could not have afforded at the regular veterinarians. We have minimal complication rates and have only lost, although significant losses to their owners slash shelter, 4 cats, which is actually a much lower fatality rate than almost all veterinarians when you consider we've done over 13,000 spay and neuter surgeries. As a tech, I am constantly monitoring my patients while I'm prepping them for the doctor, and there have been a few instances where I have saved lives by monitoring vitals closely and reversing an animal when the anesthesia is causing a complication. Every dog is examined prior to surgery, induced with IV anesthetic, intubated, and maintained on gas anesthesia, and monitored with a pulse oximeter during surgery. High-risk patients, such as pyometras and older dogs, always get IV catheters placed. Our veterinarians are so fast that placing an IV catheter into every dog would take much longer than the actual spay-neuter surgery. Any dogs that are dehydrated get either IV or sub-Q fluids during or after surgery free of charge. Our cat protocol is similar, although not all cats can be examined until they are under anesthesia, since we do many barn and feral cats. Every cat is given an injection of pre-med and then induction about 10 minutes later. The cats are put on gas anesthesia for the prep and surgery. Our veterinarians do flank spays, which take about 7 minutes per cat, so our prep time would take longer than the actual spay or neuter if we had to intubate every cat. Therefore, we only intubate if their vitals are abnormal or if they're immunocompromised or older cats. We do IV catheters when needed as well. We include subcutaneous fluids and B-complex injections for no extra cost for any cat who is remotely dehydrated, and almost every feral or barn cat. So I'm offended by this post, and I'm no longer going to be a fan of this page or your podcast. I cannot stress enough how so disappointed I truly am. So Lonnie is mad at me for discussing these cases, and what I'm failing to grasp here is why exposing some horrid practices of places like this that happened in my very own clinic. I mean, it's, why is this my fault that this happened? I don't understand. I am doing an expose of something bad. Two occurrences that happened that were very bad within a month of each other. And then all of these people come out of the woodworks to then put forth their testimonials. And yet this place is such a good marketing machine, and they have 3 locations now. They still continue to do hundreds of spays and neuters a day in the most improper way. So interestingly, if we look at Lonnie's post here, she's basically admitting that not all of them get intravenous catheters. She's admitting that the cats don't get intubated, only the severely compromised ones. And that, I would say there's no way this place is an AHA hospital, because I'm familiar with flank spays. They don't take any shorter than a regular standard spay. They just don't. So that's a misstatement right there. Flank spays do not take any longer. If it's a preference and the vet wants to do it that way, great. But there is absolutely no study or no evidence that, from a general standpoint, a flank spay takes any shorter than a standard central abdominal laparotomy spay, which is what most veterinarians do. So I look at the one statement here. We only intubate if their vitals are abnormal. Well, if their vitals are abnormal, you shouldn't be spaying or neutering them. I mean, if their vitals are abnormal, you should treat the patient and make them normal until they're ready for anesthesia, number one. Listen to this statement here. Our veterinarians are so fast that placing an IV catheter into every dog would take much longer than the actual spay and neuter surgery. Well, of course it does, but that's okay. Just because you can get quite proficient and pretty fast paced at doing spays and neuters when you do a lot of them, you have to have that intravenous catheter. There's no excuse to not do it. I don't care how short general anesthesia is. An intravenous catheter has to be there, because if the heart rate precipitously drops, you have to be able to put in atropine, epinephrine, life-saving medications to fix the problem. If their blood pressure precipitously drops, you need to be able to up the intravenous fluids. And by the way, if you're maintaining them on intravenous fluids from the moment they're induced to the moment you're actually doing the surgery, blood pressure is going to be a lot less likely to drop because you're maintaining with IV fluids. But even then, sometimes I see the pressure drop. Well, what do I do? The technician says to me, Dr. Welton, the blood pressure is dropping a bit. What would you like me to do? Up the fluids, go to this level. If that doesn't work, within a fairly expedient period of time, we try to turn back the anesthesia a little bit. If that doesn't work, then we can grab some dopamine, bring up that blood pressure. In the case of the heart dropping to a troublingly low rate, we can administer atropine. We can administer epinephrine. We can take quick, spot-on measures to make certain that things are not going to go south on us. So, I mean, while Lonnie here may be bragging about the spay, low-cost spay-neuter clinic, they are doing things very poorly. So I would venture to say probably from the description, it's a heck of a lot better than what's going on at the three-location spay-neuter clinic in my county. But certainly it's far from operating in any manner that AHA would even take a look at. So, you know, she says that as a tech, she's constantly monitoring her patients, but how is she doing it? Is she doing it manually? Is there a very, very proactive and intense intraoperative surgical monitor like is present in my practice? So, you know, I'm picking this apart here and I'm just looking and I'm saying to myself, she's all angry at me, but I don't understand why, because it doesn't change the fact that at the blog post, the veterinarian that I have pictured came from a real website and a real clinic. The stories that I am showcasing came from an actual clinic that ended up in my own hospital. These are my own experiences. Am I to lie about it? Am I to sugarcoat it so I don't hurt the feelings of somebody who actually works in one of these discount spay-neuter clinics? No, I'm not here for a popularity contest. I do what I do because I want to create the best level of care across the country. I want people to mandate the best level of care for their pets. These are cherished family members and should be treated no less. But unfortunately, there's a lot of good people out there that get duped into thinking that they might be getting the best level of care when realistically, it's horrible. You might have a doctor with a particularly rosy demeanor and they just, sunshine comes out of their mouth when they speak, yet their practices and what they're doing behind the scenes is just awful. And you have to be on the lookout for that. You have to be able to ask the right questions. One of the things, folks, I would always ask for and from my perspective mandate is an AHA accreditation. You have an AHA accredited hospital, folks, they're doing it right. They have to. You lose your accreditation if you don't. To get the AHA accreditation, you have to meet certain standards, and it's a rigorous process. AHA accreditation is very important. So Lonnie, I would challenge you to say, let us know, is this place AHA accredited? I doubt that they are doing things this way. Skipping IV catheters, not intubating cats. I mean, to me, Lonnie thought she was just refuting a point and, you know, giving me an alternative perspective that's disproving everything that I'm saying, yet she actually served to prove it quite effectively. So I think the complete opposite of her intent happened here, because there's a lot of things going on there that are not right. A pulse oximeter during surgery, as she did mention right here, I'm looking back here, a pulse oximeter during surgery is the only monitoring equipment they have. Well, a pulse oximeter just measures oxygen saturation in the blood, which, yes, it's a nice parameter to have. It gives you an audible heartbeat as well. But when we have things that go south in surgery, it is almost never oxygen saturation. Things have to be catastrophic by the time oxygen saturation is dropping, something that you would notice on a pulse oximeter. The first thing typically to go wrong with when your patient's under anesthesia is going to be blood pressure. And I don't see anything about blood pressure management here. I don't see anything about blood pressure monitoring. Our patients have cuffs on them throughout the entire procedure, getting their blood pressure measured every 2 minutes. So if there's going to be a blood pressure drop, we're going to see it. Most things that occur adversely with anesthesia are going to flow from that precipitous drop in blood pressure. So again, admittedly, it looks like they're only using a pulse oximeter to monitor, which is, you know, a little handheld device. It's something, I guess, and it's probably better than what this other place near me is doing, but at the same time, it's nowhere near what's going on in a NAHA-accredited hospital. So that's my point, folks. Do your due diligence. Don't be sold into thinking, oh, wow, I can get a spay for $100 in this place. Why would I pay, you know, three times that amount at a general practice to get this done when I can get it done for $100? Well, as my post says, very often in veterinary medicine, just as in many other things in life, you get what you pay for. So that's my show for this evening. You get what you pay for, version two. Your comments are welcome. Again, feel free to email me anytime. comments@web-dvm.net. comments@web-dvm.net. I will address those comments in the next upcoming episode, whether it's a question, a statement. You're also welcome to post at our Facebook page, The Web DVM. TV, radio, and blog is the name of our Facebook page, and also post at the blog itself. So many ways you can communicate with us. I appreciate you for your time this evening, as always, caring about what I have to say. Until next time, tune in next time. It's going to be a great episode. Going to be talking about huge advances in joint health nutrition. My animal hospital is partnering with a pharmaceutical company called Siva to make joint health nutrition new and improved. So stay tuned, because we can really help your dog. If you have any dogs that are aging, have mobility issues, orthopedic issues, spinal issues, this is going to knock your socks off. Talk to you next time, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks again for listening.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.